6 yards back, second and 16. Miller pressured again. Flag is thrown. Ball is loose. Here's KGB again. It was Joe Johnson who created it, and KGB, at least for the moment, has a touchdown, pending the penalty.
And Jim Miller didn't see Joe Johnson coming at all. He started to go to the left, then he started to scramble back the other way, and he got whammed by Joe Johnson.
You wonder, why are you playing that old sound from Monday Night Football? Well, that Kabir Baja Biyamila is the subject of, how would you describe this new podcast from Kalen Kaler? Harrowing, troubling, and certainly fascinating.
Informative.
The podcast is called The Split, the first episode of Spiraled, and episode one has dropped today, wherever you get your podcast. Kalen Kaler is joining us in studio. So Spiraled is this project of yours. It's a side gig. Who knew that you had time to do this kind of investigative work? It's amazing.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me here to talk about it, because it's really exciting. And I've been working on this for, honestly, the last 3 years. I think I've had three full-time jobs in the span of doing this podcast. So it has really been quite a journey. But it started in 2020 when I started reporting the story in just digital written form for Sports Illustrated. And it ran in a three-part series then. And it's an investigative series. It starts with Kabir Baja Biyamila, who we just heard, sacking Jim Miller there, which is a great pull. Like, awesome job, guys, on that. It starts with him because in 2019, there was a very weird, strange incident in Green Bay where he made local headlines because two of his friends that were being reported as being his followers, which wasn't necessarily true at the time, but that's how the local media was reporting it. They had shown up at his children's Christmas show. They went to a private Christian school and they were having a regular, you know, their annual Christmas program. And his friends had shown up and they were carrying loaded guns and knives. And, you know, the headmaster recognized them and was like, okay, I'm uncomfortable with you guys being here, because at that point, Kabir had kind of expressed that he wasn't down with Christianity anymore. And he had split with his wife and he had seven children who were all involved in the school in some capacity. And anyways, long story short, his friends get arrested for trespassing and not having a license to carry guns. And then this whole thing became public and Kabir started talking about what he believed, but it didn't really make sense. And none of the reporting really made sense to me. And so one of my editors sent me the link to, I think it was like a Green Bay Press Gazette article. And he was like, this feels like something really big. Like, maybe you should just start, you know, calling around and see what happens. And I think I started with some former Packers players that knew Kabir very well and were still involved in like the, you know, Packers alumni community. And it became very clear that like everybody was really concerned about him and the community was scared. And, you know, the school went to Christmas break 2 days early and hired private security because they were like, you know, we don't know what to think about this because these guys had weapons. And then Kabir had made a comment earlier that day that the headmaster had viewed as threatening, where he was like, look, you know, black people don't shoot up schools, but white people do. And his friends were white. So the whole thing was just very, very, very strange. And from there, as I start reporting, I find out there's actually more NFL players, former players who are involved. Robert Mathis, who is probably the biggest name, could be a Hall of Famer someday. He's in the Colts Ring of Honor. He's part of this, and he lives in a community of the group in Logansport, Indiana, which is rural Indiana. And then there's two more other former players, one of whom made national news in July when he was arrested. This is Daniel Muir. He played for the Packers as well, but he also played for the Colts for longer. So I think he'd be more associated with the Colts, but he's kind of a journeyman defensive lineman. Him and Robert Mathis live on the same community in Logansport, Indiana, and a SWAT team raided the community on July 1st.
Of this year?
This year. So I had to go back into, we were done with the podcast by that point. We were just kind of like waiting to release it. And I had to go back in and add like a 5-minute addendum. So not to spoil the ending for everybody, but there will be like, it will end on this most recent note of Daniel Muir and his wife getting arrested. And essentially they were arrested on charges of obstruction of justice and domestic battery, because it's a very long, convoluted story, but they were searching for their son. The police were searching for their 14-year-old son who had been with his grandmother. And when the grandma picked him up, he had a black eye, his face was swollen, and he said that his dad had beat him. So then the parents go pick up the kid. Sorry, I don't know if any of this is making sense.
No,
no,
parents,
see, this is going intense.
The parents go pick up the kid from the grandma's because they realize the grandma is going to call police and report this. And they're like, oh, no, this can't happen. So they go get the kid from the grandma's, their son. And the police are, then he becomes a missing child because DCS tries to contact them over and over again because the grandma then did report to Indiana Child Services.
Good.
And they're searching for him. And Daniel Muir and his wife are not cooperating. They're not answering the door. They're not showing, you know, DCS needs to go in and like just lay eyes on your kids and like ask questions.
A wellness check. Oh,
basically, yeah. And they're not cooperating. So it ultimately, after 10 days of that, it ultimately came to the point where a SWAT team raided and arrested them. So that happened in July. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I was really not surprised because I had actually ended the podcast on like a sentence being like, I don't know what's next, but I'm going to keep watching these players and this group because they, you know, there were all these sort of little run-ins here and there, but law enforcement, up until July, law enforcement had never had reason to enter one of the communities and actually search and like find things. And, you know, I don't even know what all they found.
Especially after what's happened at, say, you know, Ruby Ridge and the Branch Davidians and this is only a local SWAT? Was this
It was Indiana State Police. And then there were like the town police and I think the county sheriff was there too. Like they had a bunch of different
entities. Nothing federal yet.
No.
Okay.
However, the grandmother did live in Ohio, so they took the kid from Ohio to Indiana. There is potential for that. And I do think like I was at Colts camp a couple weeks ago, and on my way back, I was like, I'm going to go to Logansport. It's about an hour north of Indianapolis. And so, because, you know, when you call these people, like the prosecutor, like they're never in their office. You know, the judges are not, you know, they go home at like 2 p.m. in Logansport, Indiana. Like there's not a lot going on. So I went up there to try to get these guys in person. And I did get to talk to the judge and I did get to talk to the prosecutor who are going to be handling these charges that Daniel Muir and Kristen Muir, his wife, are facing. And I was just begging the prosecutor. I was like, you just got to tell me, like, is there something else that's going to come out of this aside from the two charges that we already know about? Because those charges are actually not very serious. Like they could pay $15,000 likely and get off and not even have to go to jail. So they're not super serious. They're the lowest level felonies. And one of them is a misdemeanor charge. So it's not a big deal as far as long-term things are concerned. But I'm just like, tell me if there's going to be something else here. Like, did you find anything else? Like, is there going to be more that comes out of this? And he just kind of looked at me and was like, I have all those answers, but I can't tell you that. And so, I was just like, wow.
Don't tell that to a reporter.
I know.
Then there's going to be more digging.
So, because I couldn't get the search warrant because it's part of the criminal investigation and it's under lock and key right now. And I couldn't get the incident report, which would have described like what they found in the community and the properties when they went in on July 1st. So there's a lot of questions I still have. But it's a very interesting, the whole story is really fascinating. And there's like a lot of themes of just outside of sports, like searching for identity when you leave your career, you know, hyper masculinity. These players were, when they left the NFL, they were really searching for that same structure of being around, you know, strong men all the time. And Kabir kept saying he felt like Christianity was like too feminine. And I think we see a lot of that going on in today's society. And then also YouTube is a huge part of this. They all sort of got involved in this because they stumbled on the YouTube channel of the pastor.
Who's the pastor?
His name is Pastor Dowell, Charles Dowell. And he is a former Army. He was in the Army for about a decade. Then he started preaching in Tennessee. And ultimately, he was part of a different group that was also pretty problematic, led by a radio preacher named R.G. Stair. And he was called the Last Day Prophet of God. And he had told his followers in the year 2000 the world was going to end. And it didn't. And so then when it didn't end, Dowell kind of branched off and formed his own group. And then R.G. Stair actually ended up going to prison for charges of I'm going to get the charges wrong, but essentially he was charged for like inappropriate behavior to young women in his church. So there's a lot of that this group comes out of. And so, yeah, the whole story, I mean, I was working on this in 2020, which was a perfect year because I originally started in 2020. It was a perfect year because there was like nothing else going on. Like for that spring and summer, like we didn't know what was going to be happening. So I was just like digging on YouTube and just calling people. And like every day there was like something new to learn, which was really fun.
Kabir, he was raised Muslim and then they converted to Christianity?
So his family is from Nigeria. So they were Muslim in Nigeria and he did, I think they were culturally Muslim. And then they also went to church when he was growing up. So he was around both things, but he more identified as being Muslim. And then when he met his first wife, Eileen, who is a big part of episode one, and that was really cool to get to talk to her because she didn't want to participate when I first did this for Sports Illustrated because it was a little too recent. Things were too fresh. And she was like, I just don't want to go there. But she did participate in this podcast. And it's really interesting to hear her perspective on things. So when they got together, she had just become a Christian and was really passionate about it and was trying to, you know, tell him about her faith. And then through her, and maybe because of her, Kabir became a Christian as well. And then he became even more vocal about it than even she was.
And then this group claims to be Hebrew Israelite, yes, obedient to Yah and their savior, who they describe as Jesus the Christ. And they call themselves Israelites of Straightway.
Yes, they're like a mix of a lot of things. So they're Hebrew Israelites, but Hebrew Israelites, there's a huge spectrum of what that means. Some groups only allow Black people into the group, and they're very anti any other race. This group is not. They're a little bit more open. They have white people. They have Hispanic people. They've got sort of a range of races involved. You know, and some of them are very anti-Semitic. And this pastor certainly is. If you go on his YouTube channel, he's very anti-Semitic. He is misogynistic. He is homophobic. All of your isms that you can think of, he's pretty much, that's his language on his YouTube page. And so the groups sort of adopt all of that, you know, thinking as well. And so they're also a little bit prepper ideology, like they're preparing for the end times. And they really believe in arming themselves and training with weapons. And a lot of their YouTube content is target practice and showing off their guns. Like the pastor, whenever he's on his YouTube, he's got like giant rifles behind him hanging up. And that's sort of part of his like macho brand. So they're kind of a fascinating mix of different like popular topics. And they evolve too. Like they also practice polygyny, but that wasn't always the case. The pastor sort of brought that in at a certain point, and then a bunch of people left, but then a bunch of people came, you know, because some people were like, we don't want to be part of that. But that's sort of something that he wanted to do. So it's sort of like, you know, when you have a leader in charge who's just sort of doing literally whatever he wants, and then he's making that the group's ideology and finding biblical verses to support it and all of that. So it's been really interesting to watch, even over the last like 4 years, like how some of the things he talks about have changed. And, you know, and they don't believe, they're a little bit sovereign citizen as well.
They're on every list.
Birth certificates or marriage certificates or marriage licenses. Yeah.
Yeah. Or the laws they hate the government. Apply to them.
Yep. They don't like the government. And in Green Bay, when the two guys that Kabir sent to the Christmas program, when they were going through the court system for their charges, there were some of the most insane filings I've ever read. Like handwritten things being like, I do not recognize the state of Wisconsin. You know, that type of language of like trying to separate, make yourself like a, almost like a shell company, right? Like, it's not me. I'm being represented by, honestly, it's so complicated. I barely even understand it, but they do it to like, you know, muck up the court system and make it crowded so that you're just making the judge's life harder. And if you, you know, read through the filings and like, There was some like court TV stuff on it. Like the judges are just so exhausted. They're just like, get out of my courtroom. You know, like this is not how things work, but that's how they handle it.
Spiraled is the name of the podcast. If you're looking for it, you're like, wait, what is this? Spiraled is the name of the podcast. You can see our friend Kaylin and all of the digging that she's done. With something like this, considering, and luckily there hasn't been tragedy yet with this.
Have you been threatened?
When I first came out with this story, it wasn't anything serious, but I got a lot of mean comments, no like threats. And actually, like, Robert Mathis thanked me, you know, and so did Kabir, because they, and this is something you have to think about too when you do a story like this, like, am I promoting this by writing about it, by giving them attention? People are now going to read about this group that
by platforming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you are, in a sense, by reporting on what's happened, you're drawing attention to the group that they didn't have before.
Yeah, but you got to shine sunlight to disinfect, though.
That's true. Yeah. So I didn't get any actual threats, but I did get challenged to a debate by Pastor Dowell, because he knew for a while that I was working on this. And so he was like, Sports Illustrated wants to interview me. I'll do a live debate. And I'm like, that's just not, like, that's not, I'm not here.
It's not what you're,
that's not how this
I'm
works.
Not here to debate you. I'm just here to ask questions and, like, see what you have to say about it. So needless to say, we did not end up debating each other on YouTube Live. That was not something that I was going to agree to. But yeah, I haven't heard from them since this podcast has come out. So we'll see. I'm not sure if they're going to care or have any response, but none of them participated in the podcast. Kabir did participate in the story 4 years ago. We had a 6-hour interview. It was the longest interview of my life. He never got up to go to the bathroom. He never got a drink of water. I took like 3 breaks. I was like, I have to go to the bathroom. I'm going to need to get a snack. Like, he was just powering through. And that's what's really interesting about him, is he was very much like a local hero in Green Bay, and now he's not at all anymore.
He campaigned in Green Bay, right? For Scott Walker?
Yes. And he was beloved, and he's really charismatic. Like, he's still, even though he's changed all his beliefs, left his family behind, is unrecognizable in many ways, he's still super charismatic, super friendly. Like, when I was talking to him for 6 hours, it was not like combative in any way. It was like very inviting, and like, he wanted to participate in the podcast. I could tell because I talked to him a few times where I'm like telling him what I was doing, and ultimately he's like, I'm not going to be able to. And I think it's because he wasn't given permission to. But he still is like a super charismatic guy, and I think that's sort of, he has people living at his home in Green Bay, he's got a community in Green Bay of this group, and I think that lends it well for him, because he is someone that, you know, you naturally want to follow.
Does he have a relationship at all with Akbar? Because Akbar has become really, really popular, and he is very mainstream.
Very mainstream. I think they do still have a relationship. I wanted to talk to Akbar for this. I wasn't able to like get through to him. I did have a conversation with him after the first story ran, and it wasn't for the story. It was just after it came out, and we talked about a few things. I think they do still have a relationship. I'm not sure how much time they spend together, but I don't think, I don't think it's like his wife where there's really no contact anymore. I think they do still have a relationship. And I think, I know Akbar is not involved in what Kabir is at all, but I think there is a level of understanding between them.
Can we take a brief time out, come back, and then talk some football?
Yeah.
Because I know there's some people whose appetites are whetted for Spiral based on this. If this is just scratching the surface,
right.
Wow. Okay, so we'll do that. We'll talk football with Kalen Kaler next on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
In Odyssey. It's football, mister.
It is, and it's coming soon. College football is the rising tide of college football is beginning to lap against our shores, and soon the NFL waves will come crashing in. And I'm ready because I have expectations. I think the Bears are going to be good. We have a little bit more evidence with which to draw some of these conclusions. Where are you on the quality of everything with this Bears team right now? How do you think that all of the offseason excitement is continuing to build apace?
Yes, I do. And I think it's going to feel encouraging still, like through the first part of the season, because their schedule is just not that hard. Like, I think the Titans game is going to go really well, and the offense is going to play very well. And then possibly the Texans are next after that, right? On Sunday Night Football.
Yes.
I could see it hitting a wall, possibly offensively against the Texans, because that is going to be a much better defense than the Titans are going to present. So I think I could see it being like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. This is working so well. And then boom, on Sunday Night Football at Houston. But, you know, I think overall, this is as best as we've seen a Bears roster. And, you know, I think, what was it, Ian Cunningham said this week, like, or today, like, this is the best we've felt about the roster in the time that we've been here. So I think that's true. I think that's very true. And, you know, what we saw from Caleb in the preseason was mostly really good. You know, the three and outs in that second game against the Bengals, like second string defense, is not great. But then when he did put it together, it was super exciting and showed us all of the things that are advertised about him. So I'm optimistic.
Yeah, all the things that are possible. You'd love to see him succeed a little bit more inside of structure, but to see that he's got the ability to make the incredible plays, like with his arm and by scrambling, is really, really exciting. It's an intoxicating thing.
The Bears have made their decision on a backup quarterback, obviously, with Tyson Bagent being that guy. Brett Rippon today was waived. I imagine they'll kind of sleep him back down to the practice squad, and then we'll see that dance of elevation or not, depending on who's healthy. I was a little surprised that the league did not want to change that rule, that ultimately the Players Association and they somehow decided they didn't want to add the third quarterback, the Brock Purdy rule, for people who want to remember it that way. There's, and I try to remind everybody this, every quarterback seems to play every year. Every quarterback plays, and I don't want to give away what you're working on now, but why?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's fine because it's going to come out next week, so, you know, I don't think anybody will catch me on it, but there have been, as you mentioned, last year, 67 quarterback started games. The year before was an NFL Super Bowl era record, 69 quarterback started games. So you're talking about teams are regularly reaching to their third or picking out a different player who wasn't even on their roster to start the season and signing them to be their third. And this past season, there were two teams. The Browns started five quarterbacks, and then there were two other teams, the Vikings and the Jets, that started four. And that's just kind of crazy. And when you look at it, too, the other thing that I think makes it a trend, I was doing some math, which is hard for me, but I figured it out. We added a 17th game, right? So it can be easy to just say, okay, there's an extra game. Maybe that's why there's more quarterbacks starting. Maybe that's why there's more injuries. The season's a little bit longer. But I did the math and I just looked at what it should be. The average by adding one more game should be, based off of all the previous years, should be 59 quarterback starting games per season. But the last 3 years since they've added a 17th game, we're at 66 quarterback starting games. So it's a little bit higher than it should be. And I think there's a few reasons for it. One, injured reserve is more flexible. You can now bring a player off of IR instead of they're gone for the whole year. You can bring them off after, what is it, four games now?
4 weeks, yeah.
4 weeks. Concussion protocol is more stringent now. So I was just actually talking to Josh Johnson yesterday, who was part of that Brock Purdy game, which inspired the comeback of the emergency QB3 rule. And I was talking to him about that whole situation in that game. And he was like, I really didn't want to come out of the game, but the test is so, it's so detailed now that it's hard to hide those symptoms. So he goes back to the locker room and he's like, yeah, they made me do something and I got nauseous. So then I had to just concede, like, I'm coming out of the game. So I think the concussion protocol is part of it. And there were several starters who did miss a few games, from concussions last year. CJ Stroud, I think, Dorian Thompson Robinson was not a starter for the Browns, but became a starter for the Browns. He had a concussion. I think there were four or five guys who starters who went out with concussions for a little bit of time. You know, and then you have the 17th game. And then also part of this, you mentioned the QB3. The league got rid of the emergency QB3 rule, and I think it was 2011. And when that happened, you saw dramatically that teams stopped rostering three quarterbacks. And the third quarterback was most often going to be on their practice squad, which means anybody can poach that player unless you protect them every week, which sometimes you're going to do that, sometimes you're not, depending on your roster math. So when that happened in the year 2000, when there were 30 NFL teams, 100% of teams had three quarterbacks on their 53-man roster. And then from that year, it just slowly started decreasing up until last season. There were only 15 teams, the Bears actually being one of them, that had three quarterbacks on their 53-man roster for week one. I didn't look at every week in the season because that was going to be too hard, but I figured week one, that kind of signals your intentions for the year. So last year, less than half of the NFL had three quarterbacks on their 53-man roster, which then means that less than half of the NFL was even utilizing the emergency third quarterback because they have to be on your 53-man roster. They can't be on your practice squad unless you're elevating them, you know, and you see that throughout the year a few times here and there. But for the most part, less than half of the league is even prioritizing that third quarterback spot enough to keep them on your roster. And if they're not on your roster, then you're not getting a chance to develop them. And I think that's related to this too, because the Browns last season, Deshaun Watson gets hurt. PJ Walker wasn't very good. Dorian Thompson Robinson wasn't good.
And they luck into hurt. Flacco.
Yeah. And so then they decide, okay, well, we didn't have anybody on our actual roster who was any good. So then they go get Flacco and take a chance on him. And he ends up being good, but he's got all of the experience. So you can't say that he was a QB3 who was developed because he was a starting quarterback for, you know, 15 years.
Yeah.
So I think that the development of the QB3 has almost died in a way. And it'll be interesting to see if the trend of starting quarterbacks getting hurt, if that makes teams start to value that third quarterback spot a little bit more. And I thought with what, Dan, with what you just mentioned yesterday, the news came out that the NFLPA decided to veto an update to the emergency third quarterback rule, which would have been that that guy could have come from your practice squad, which then means that nobody was probably going to put the third quarterback on their active roster because you could just have him from your practice squad instead.
And now you can only do it, what, three times? Is that the, like, you have to... You can do the shuffle game between practice squad and active roster, but it's not unlimited like it seemed to be over last year.
Well, and if you have, so if you want to have three quarterbacks dressed on game day, as it is right now, you have to have that third guy on your active roster for Sunday. And if you do, he then doesn't count to your 46 on your game day 46. So he's like number 47. But if you need him, if you end up needing him, you can have him. But what they wanted, what the owners wanted, was to have that guy come from the practice squad so that you wouldn't even have to have him on your active roster. But he could still dress on game day being on the practice squad.
And you wouldn't have to pay him a game check.
Exactly. That's why the PA hasn't, I don't think they've come out with a statement on it, but that's why they were like, absolutely not. Because that would hurt the development of those guys. It's going to hurt their opportunities.
Yeah, and you're taking the most important position in professional sports and having somebody hang around and do it for free.
Right.
It's so funny how this rule has, you know, kind of done a 360, because it was 45 plus one. Like, back in the day, that's what it was. Your third quarterback was the plus one. And then it was just like, you know what? Let's just add a 46 roster spot for game day. And then teams are like, well, are we better served
for something else?
Right. We'd rather have another linebacker or another DB. And now here we are again with, well, why isn't it 46 plus one? Or it's a very strange thing.
But the lesson to be learned, it gets back to what we were saying about the kickoff rule and how no matter what parameters you want to put in place for the best motivations, coaches and executives are going to find a way to game it.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to find a way,
as they should,
to make it either less expensive to the team or help them win in a way that might not help somebody else. And I love that the NFL is happy to experiment with all this stuff and always happy to do it, but they've just got to think 3-4 steps. I hope they have coaches in there who can say, working for the league, who can say, hey, I'll tell you what we would have done with this.
Right.
You know, because you got to do that. And that's, did we just find out now that they're going to stay with the regular sticks and not do the chip and the ball?
Yeah. So that was funny because, I mean, the league never committed. They never said, oh, we're definitely going to do it in 2024. But they were testing it out in preseason stadiums. But I could never tell how many stadiums actually had, because you have to outfit the stadium with a bunch more cameras than they already had to operate this new system, which is measuring, you know, did the ball cross the first down marker? Did it cross the line to gain? And like for example, the Bears, their four preseason games, they never played in a game that had the technology to do this. And when we had John Hussey, when John Hussey came to Bears camp, he spoke with the reporters. This was probably 3 weeks ago. It was right after the Hall of Fame game. He was like, yeah, we thought we were going to have it in the Hall of Fame game. And we were like preparing to use it and like not have to do official measurements ourselves. And then we get there and we're told, oh, actually, we don't have it. So he was like, I don't really know what the rollout is. I don't really know what day this is occurring. And, you know, and then he sort of walked us through like the process now of taking a measurement. You know, there's like five guys involved. Somebody has to have their heels on the line. You know, somebody has to clear the players out of the way. And Hussey was like, I have to make sure that my butt isn't like facing the camera. Like it's all these details that you don't think about of like going into a measurement. So he was like, I wish we did have the technology. Like, I wish we could use that because it would make our jobs a little bit easier. But in the games that it was used, there was one Giants Lions. I think it was week one of the preseason. They did do a measurement using the new cameras and the new system. And it took a really long time. So it just wasn't very smooth. And I think when they figure it out, when they get all the stadiums outfitted, I think it will be better. But it's like with anything, with the kickoff, like with all of these things, like that they changed the first time, it's like they weren't fully ready to implement that everywhere right now. So they're not going to be doing it. But I think at some point it will make more sense. But
it makes more sense now.
Yeah.
But they just won't do it.
But they couldn't get it together.
The bigger question, where right now is your Bears issued backpack?
Oh my gosh. It's in my closet.
Okay.
I keep meaning to mail it to my cousin who is a big Bears fan and he lives in, shout out to Rowan Jones. He lives in Lebanon, Oregon, on a ranch and he's a huge Bears fan. And yeah. And so he deserves the backpack and I really need to send it. I need to send it to him.
Yes. He's probably waiting for it.
Yeah. I made a bet with him. I told him that if the Bears were to make the Super Bowl by, you know, some chance that I would buy him a flight to New Orleans. So we'll see.
Wow. Okay.
He's so like, he's so pure. He's just such an optimist fan. And I was like, you know what? If this happens, then I'll do that for you.
Well, that's very nice of you.
Yeah.
Bears coverage on The Score is brought to you by the Odyssey app. Search for 670 The Score and tap to follow to receive alerts on our Bears coverage. And if you can't get enough, check out the Take the North podcast with David Haw and Dan Wiederer, breaking down the biggest storylines ahead of the new season. Follow Take the North on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. The podcast we have been talking about with Kalen Kaler is this fantastic and fascinating podcast called Spiraled, and episode one is out now. You even have a hat to commemorate.
Yeah, shout out to your mom for that.
Yeah.
My mom sent me a hat with just the release date, and it's actually a great marketing tool because people will be like, what's happening? It looks like it's like maybe like my wedding date or something, but people would be like, what's happening on that day? Like I was at the farmer's market last week and my veggie guy was like, what's happening in 6 days? And I was like, actually, I have a podcast coming out. Let me tell you about it. And then I forced him to subscribe to the show.
Good.
So it's great marketing.
Well, it is my parents' 57th anniversary today.
Oh my gosh.
So 8/27/24.
And cut down day.
Yes. And cut down. I mean, so something is
very important
is
events.
Happening.
Yeah.
Cool.
Kalen, good luck with this. This is
a lot.
So make sure you take your break from it too.
Oh yeah. I was having dreams about the YouTube channel when I was really in it. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, am I going to come out like indoctrinated after reporting on this? But I did not. So everything's fine.
So far.
Right.
We'll call somebody. We'll keep an eye out.
Until I do the sequel.
Mm-hmm. So check it out. It is called Spiraled, and you can always check out her work for ESPN. Our longtime friend, Kalen Kaler, kind enough to drop by today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And when we come back, we've got a choice of things here, Lawrence. I know we were planning on the Keon Coleman video.
Man, we just keep pushing that back. And
I know, but they found the Rich Hill Fox
fine
Napoleon Dynamite thing.
Yeah, that works.
Okay.
Right, do that next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Baseball. Baseball coverage on The Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch.
Want some baseball coverage?
I do.
Jason First, Hayward signs with the Astros.
Ooh.
So hedge your bet. You get an opportunity to win a ring on both sides of the leagues.
Pretty good. Caller 6 to The Score's contest line, 312-540-0670, wins a pair of tickets to our live show at Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville.
Chicken strips.
From 10 to 2, Tuesday, September 17th, we'll be joined on-site by Cubs pitcher Justin Steele.
Really good pizza.
All brought to you by Bosch Power Tools and Phillips Chevrolet.
We love Bosch. The Bosch people owe me a cap.
They do?
Yeah, remember I was saying
Oh, that's right.
They had like a really cool cap, and I was like, I want that cap. Let's go, Bosch.
I just want more of that beer. I want Ian to bring us
chicken strips.
Yeah, Ian should bring us beer every time.
I'd be fine with that.
That patio blend was great.
Studs, did I see you had, what beer did you have last night? I thought you, it looked like the can that Ian gave us.
No, it was Spotted Cow.
Gotcha.
Ah.
No, it wasn't actually, because we weren't supposed to drink the games.
Oh, you would never drink at
I would never, never. I would never. I would never drink in a public park.
No, that was Photoshop.
I sent you a picture before. You know, I was like, hey, I'm hanging out, getting ready for the game.
Right. In your private public park.
Nobody ever drinks at slow pitch softball games.
Never. It's not a thing.
No, nor at I don't know, Azteca League baseball games, for example.
No, no one ever drinks at those.
Jason had a Modelo after his bullpen.
Sounds about
that's
right.
The coach came up to him after the game, and they had to have it translated for him. The manager came over, and he's like, okay, you're an honorary Mexican. He's like, why am I an honorary Mexican? He goes, I saw you drink a Modelo after your bullpen.
That's how you do it.
He's like, all right, okay, because he could say, it's hot.
Be hot.
He said, it was the coldest thing I could find. Anyway, that's not why you called. We mentioned that Rich Hill is back in the major leagues at age 44. He did his one-game stint at Worcester. It's Worcester, right? And now he's back in the bigs. And we always think about this time. I think this was his rookie year. I think this was 05 when he introduced a Cubs lineup on Fox as Kip from Napoleon Dynamite.
Hi, this is today's starting lineup for the Chicago Cubs. My name's Kip. I was in the movie Napoleon Dynamite. Today we're going to have Alfonso Soriano leading off for us. He's going to be playing left field. He's going to be making some pretty sweet moolah out there with Uncle Rico today. And we got Cesar Torres. He's pretty cool, I guess. He's going to be playing second, shortstop. I'm sorry. He's been playing short, and it looks like he's batting second. We got Derek Lee. He's pretty good. He's an all-star. He's going to be playing first base. And then the cleanup position, of course, we have Aramis Ramirez. He's pretty cool. He's going to be batting cleanup. That's fourth. And we got fifth, it's Cliff Floyd. He's a pretty large man. He's going to be a bit playing out there in right field. He can hit the ball a long way. We got Mark DeRosa. We all know he's trained to become a cage fighter, and he's going to be hitting sixth, playing second. Jock Jones, he also can hit the ball a long way. He's playing center field for us today. He's going to be batting seventh. Rob Bowen, behind the plate, doing the dirty work. He's catching. Looks like we got Ted Lilly. He's also got some great moves out there. He'll be pitching. He's pretty good. So.
And there you have the lineup for the Cubs as Adolfo Soriano takes strike one.
Idiot.
Wait a second. It was Stockton who gave us an Adolfo Soriano in there again.
It's fine.
That's the best part of it.
We got to go. The afternoon show is here. Next on The Score.